What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. I just went to my happy place. I just went to Maui, and it was truly amazing. Priceline has always been about getting you to your happy place for a happy price, with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels in Costa Rica or five-star hotels for two-star prices in Cabo.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Final Four is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host Eric, alongside with expert analyst Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Well, Rod, we're back now that the season's over, and we're going to go over a brief summary of the Michigan State season. Michigan State, as you recall, finished at 23-13. The non-conference began in November, December, way back when, with a couple of Big Ten games, with the starting off with the always challenging Champions Classic against Kansas, now the national champion, and former national champion Baylor in the Battle for Atlantis. Michigan State looked really strong. They had wins against Loyola Chicago, which was a tournament team, UConn, which was also a tournament team in the Bahamas. The defense looked really good. Marcus Bingham really seemed to be emerging as a great player in the defensive end and really kind of mucking things up for other offenses. Big Ten play started back in full in January, and that's where we started kind of seeing some trouble with the Michigan State team. They won their first four, but definitely saw some cracks in the defenses there, as the defense didn't look quite as good and really struggling on the defensive boards, and eventually caught up to them in the home game against Northwestern. Won three of the next four, and then just disaster happened in the rack, where Rutgers just blew them out of the water. And then Michigan State really struggled, finishing 3-7 down the stretch, although had a nice win against Purdue, sandwiched with some bad losses to Iowa, Michigan, and Ohio State, and finished 11-9 on the season. Big Ten tournament, Michigan State started looking kind of like a Michigan State team of old. Played a lot of toughness, rebounding pretty well, playing good defense, had good wins against Maryland, which was the second one in a row since they had to finish the season on senior day against Maryland. And then pretty handily, I think, took care of Wisconsin. Although it was a close game, it never felt like Wisconsin was really in charge there. And played Purdue really tough, losing the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament. And gave us a lot of optimism going into the tournament. And we saw that spill over into the tournament as well. We saw the Michigan State team that didn't look like the team that had looked during most of the Big Ten season. And it looked like kind of the team from the preseason, where they played really well. They played a really, really skilled Davidson team, beat them as a number 7 seed, and then took on number 2 seed Duke, which is a Final Four team. And I think we both talked right after that game, we thought they had a real chance of winning that game. They're up 5 with, I think, under 5 minutes to go, and really seemed to be in charge. And then Duke was just Duke. They just had too much talent and, you know, not making any mistakes. And Michigan State made a couple and wasn't able to get a couple stops, which is sort of what the defense was like the rest early in the season. So when you look at the Michigan State team, you look at it from an offensive standpoint, their one real strength was, unlike most seasons, it wasn't actually defensive and rebounding. It was actually three-point shooting. And so struggled early with turnovers, as we seem to always every season, and weren't super reliable inside the arc. Free throws were really good. We shot actually a lot more than usual, but it wasn't enough to overcome a lot of those problems. And that is sort of, with any season, they seem like, you know, it's like your kids, right? They're all different. And this season definitely felt different than other previous seasons. And I think the Michigan State team we saw seemed different than we've seen in the recent past, certainly in the, quite recently. So why don't we just kind of break this season down? Let's first just talk about the non-conference. Now we've got that summary out of the way. Your impression coming to the summary of the non-conference, my impression was this is going to be a really good team. And I can only imagine they're going to get better, especially with the defense looks so much improved with Marcus Bingham.
Yeah. You know, when you try to do this and evaluate a season and measure it against what the expectations were at the outset, that's the hard part, is keeping that in mind. I had Michigan State picked 5th in the preseason and in the conference, that is. And if we look at the standings, MSU actually ended up finishing. Sorry, I'm forgetting. It's been a while here.
We were tied with Michigan.
Tied for seventh with Michigan at 11-9. So slightly disappointing in that respect, at least relative to what I thought they would be, but not massively so. If you told me at the outset they're going to finish 11-9 in the league, I probably would have been a little bit disappointed with that, but I wouldn't have thought it was crazy. That's a two-game uptick from the previous season, by the way. Although one could counter, it was a somewhat weaker Big Ten than the year prior. So, but my point a second ago about you have to keep in mind where you're at in given moments when you're talking about expectations is MSU's play for most of the non-conference, I think, had a lot of people, myself included, I would imagine you, and certainly pollsters, because let's not forget, Michigan State was a top 10 team for a decent, when they got back into Big Ten play in early January, they were a top 10 team. I think people's perspective had changed on this group, and it was because of the way they played November and December. Now, they had that opener in the Champions Classic against Kansas. They lost that game, but I actually came away from that one feeling relatively encouraged because they were in it. They didn't get run off the floor. And I saw some signs. That was, if you remember, that was A.J. Hogard's first breakout game of the season. I saw some things that I thought indicated Marcus Bingham played well. And I thought I saw some things that indicated, all right, this team may be a little bit ahead of where I thought they would be. And that actually, I do think, was supported by what we saw in the Bahamas a couple of weeks later. You mentioned they beat Loyola and they beat UConn, both in very competitive, very close games. You could argue that MSU got away with one in both of those wins, and I wouldn't disagree. The UConn game especially. UConn had to kind of semi-collapse for that one to happen, but they did. Remember, Danny Hurley got teed up late. It was crazy.
Right, yeah.
No reason for it. You know, all that kind of nonsense helped. But the fact is, what I was encouraged by was, one, Michigan State was competitive against two likely tournament teams and ended up being exactly that. But the other thing was that they showed the resiliency to find a way to win a close game two straight days. And frankly, the first half against what was then a very, very good Baylor team was also encouraging. And the second half, Baylor pulled away because I think MSU ran out of gas. Third game in 3 days against a very, very good opponent. They just didn't have enough in the tank to make it, you know, six straight good halves of basketball. They had to settle for five. So they didn't win the championship. They were runners up. But I think going into that tournament, when you looked at that field, I don't think there's anybody who would have said, well, that finish was a disappointment. That was a pretty good indicator. Hey, Michigan State has got a pretty good competitive team. The other thing that I liked in the rest of the non-conference, and even those first two Big Ten games against, I think it was against Northwestern and Penn State, if I remember correctly.
Minnesota, maybe.
Minnesota, but... Penn State, that's right. Is that when Michigan State played quote-unquote bad teams the year prior, but was still beating them, that was when we were still deluded that Michigan State had another very, very good team in 2021. What should, in retrospect, what should have been the red flag is they were having real problems in putting away the Oaklands, the Western Michigans, those teams. This team did not have those problems. In fact, they handily beat some very good teams. Toledo had a very good team in the MAC this year. Michigan State handled them. They won those.
In Louisville.
They went right, Louisville. Not a vintage Louisville team by any stretch, but still a high major opponent. Michigan State handled them. You know, it seemed to me to indicate, okay, this team is a little different. They're taking care of business against teams that they should. There's still a lot of room for growth. The really encouraging thing was at that point, the defense looked potentially very, very good. Because they were solid on the perimeter, which, you know, was not a huge surprise, but was good to see. And Marcus Bynum was playing great basketball, really in all respects, because he was rebounding well. He was giving them some scoring punch of the five. But where he was really making an impact was the way he defended. And I don't just mean the shot blocking. His length was impacting everything in the lane. He was taking passing lanes away. He was active. He was focused, was handling pick and roll pretty well. And it looked to me at that point that Michigan State had upside even from where I'd picked them. And I think as we entered the new year, there was reason to think, given that Purdue had shown they maybe weren't quite the juggernaut I had anticipated they would be in the preseason, that they had real flaws on the defensive end. Given that, I thought, well, there's not a team in this league Michigan State can't hang with, and that should mean that they can be in the mix to win a Big Ten title or at least contend for one. And that's how it felt. As you mentioned, when the calendar flipped, and I would even say just before that, because I actually think the first sign of trouble was that game against Tubby Smith's High Point team, the last non-conference game. Now, they played it without Marcus Bynum and was it Max Christie that missed that game? Two starters missed it with COVID. So they weren't at full strength. But the fact remains, High Point is still a team that you ought to drill. And it was Michigan State struggled defensively in that game. They really struggled to rebound defensively. So even without the two starters, it felt like, in retrospect, I can look at it and say, well, that's where the problems really started to show up. At the moment, it felt like a blip. But then they got back into Big Ten play, and they won a few games, but it didn't feel good. They were playing teams that they ought to beat and really struggling to do so. And the primary reasons they were struggling to win had to do with their ability to defend or inability to defend. All of a sudden, Marcus wasn't the same guy in terms of his consistency, and the perimeter defense was atrocious. But even worse than that was the way they didn't rebound the ball defensively. Poor offensive rebounding teams, Northwestern, just tattooing them on the offensive glass. And it eventually cost MSU a game at home against Northwestern, the fact that they couldn't end possessions with a defensive rebound. That ended up becoming a consistent problem the rest of the way. I don't think they ever really solved that certainly in the regular season. And that led to the inconsistency that we saw, where they were capable of beating a high caliber team like Purdue. But they were just as capable of losing to a poor team or getting drilled by teams like Michigan or Ohio State late in the season. It never felt like they did what we've come to expect Izzo teams to do, which is gradually progress as Big Ten play goes on. And by late February, you feel it getting into a crescendo. So as we ended the regular season, I was extremely pessimistic about the idea that Michigan State was going to be capable of finding anything, because even the year prior, for as rough as that season was, MSU closed the regular season playing very well, about as well as I think that team was capable of playing, honestly. Beat three top five teams within like a 10-day span. You could make the argument that they had found something late and were fitting that pattern of Izzo teams getting better as the year went along. This team, I couldn't find it. You know, they go and handle Purdue in what felt like a huge win, and then it's back-to-back pratfalls on the road against Michigan and Ohio State that immediately followed it. Losing those games wasn't the problem, but the way they did was a massive problem because they looked awful. So
I was just going to say, I think when it came to the team, you're used to just some bedrocks and foundational things with the team that you can count on every game. And
right.
And I feel like every team has an identity. Michigan State teams tend to, at least one of the identities, is playing good defense. There are definitely games where they just don't play good defense. I mean, that happens with any team. You know, you have a bad night. But this team would be very Heckle and Jide, right? Like, or Jekyll and Hyde, where they just were really great, then really bad, and then you just never knew what you're getting. I think, you know, right. You're right. Like you said, they play great against Purdue. They play you could definitely see what the defensive strategy was. You can tell that they were executing it exactly as they had planned. Perfect. And then the next game, you're like, okay, well, it should be exactly the same strategy. And you think that's kind of looks like what they're trying to do, but they just didn't do anything. I mean, you could see sort of what they're trying to do and just weren't able to do it. Yeah. And the fact that they couldn't rebound, boy, I tell you, it is just something you never really ever worry about as a Michigan State fan. And that was definitely the thing that was, I think, their Achilles heel all season. The fact they just couldn't clean up the boards, which makes your defense look bad. Cause as soon as you don't get that defensive rebound, then of course, you know, you're out of position and there are guys who are taking, you know, 2 foot shots now around the basket maybe, and just, it puts you in a bad spot defensively. And I think it just, you know, wears you down. I mean, obviously less possessions and less opportunity to score too for yourself.
I would argue that there are few plays in basketball that are more deflating for a team to have happen to it than giving up an offensive rebound followed by a basket for the opponent. It just takes the life out of you. And Michigan State, now look, if you look back at the statistics, and I know that the popular perception is Michigan State is a dominant rebounding program. The truth is, they've mostly been a great offensive rebounding program. Defensive rebounding stats, at least as measured by defensive rebounding percentage, which is the best measure of it, in my view, Michigan State is not typically a great defensive rebounding team. Great defensive rebounding teams have been like Bo Ryan's Wisconsin teams. John Beilein's Michigan teams were that. But you can still be Michigan State, even without being like a top 10 defensive rebounding team, they still frequently have had top 10 defenses. The difference this year was the defensive rebounding wasn't just not elite. It was downright bad for too much of this season. And when you combine that with inconsistency in other defensive areas, you get what you get. This team ended up finishing number 67 in adjusted defense ranking. So that's overall defense as adjusted for strength of schedule that you play. That is the worst mark by an Izzo team since the 05-06 season. Now, if you remember that team, that was the year after they went to the Final Four. You had lost some guys from that team, but you still had a ton of talent. Mo Egger, Shannon Brown, Paul Davis, Drew Neitzel was a sophomore. There was still a lot of talent on that team. They were a team that was expected to be a Final Four contender for sure, and they didn't come close. They lost their first-round game to George Mason in the tournament, but that was a worse defensive team than this one was. And this year, it was the third-worst finish of the entire KenPom era, so we're talking 21 seasons. This was the third-worst, this team, on the defensive end. And I think defensive rebounding played an outsized role in that. There were stretches of games where Michigan State simply could not get a defensive rebound to save their lives. And I know that people's temptation is to blame that on the big men. But the reality is, especially in the modern game with so much three-point shooting, which tends to mean so much more long rebounding, it's truly a team-wide.
I was just going to say, and you'll definitely see that with Michigan State really relies on the guards getting a lot of those rebounds. And,
right,
with, you know, that would be it. That'd be Max Christie, Gabe Brown. Those are the ones you're expecting to clean up that stuff. And those guys just weren't very good. I think when it comes to rebounding, there's no excuse in the sense that they're not small. They're not weak. I mean, maybe you could argue Max could have been stronger, but they were just not anticipating where balls are going, I guess. I don't have a better explanation for it, except I'd watch these games and I'd sit in the stands. And, you know, when you're up in the second level where I am, you see, you know, you can definitely see where things are going to happen. And you just watch the ball and you're like, you just would see people just reacting too slow.
Yep. I think
wait till it hit the ground and then they go after it. It's like, that's too late. You got to be moving before then.
It was a slow reacting team. The one guy I think showed potential to be a plus rebounder in that group is Jaden Akins, but one guy isn't enough. Yeah. And so consequently, that was where I thought the problems were. You know, offensively, you mentioned turnovers, and of course that's everybody's favorite obsession, but it should be noted that that is an area Michigan State got steadily better at as the year went on. And by the time they hit tournament play, turnovers weren't a problem. They really weren't. So offensively, I think the big issues, well, the single big issue was inability to score efficiently inside the arc. This was a very good three-point shooting team. And that was a key for as much success as Michigan State had. Three-point shooting was a big part of it. But if that's going to be your strength and it's not combined with at least consistent production inside the arc, you're going to be a team that is subject to kind of feast and famine play, because even great shooting three-point teams will have off days. It will happen. And it did happen to this team, as good as they were. They just, I would say the one guy who gave them a real spark inside the arc is, more often than not, AJ Hogard. Other than him, it was a real struggle. MSU lacked post-up options, which is nothing new. That's really been a problem, I would say, since Nick Ward left. They haven't had a guy who was a consistent back-to-the-basket player. The problem is this team, I think, got a little better with pick-and-roll offense than they were the year prior, but not nearly good enough. That's how the Cassius-Xavier Tillman combination worked. That team didn't, you know, X was not a great low post player, but he was extremely productive in two-point scoring because he was so good off the roll. They didn't have anybody at his level this year. So all those things combined to make the offense, while not as bad as the defense, still not great. So they entered tournament play with very, very little, I would say no momentum, zero momentum, even with that win over Maryland on senior day. It just, yeah, it felt to me like, okay, we've seen this before. They go lose a couple, they win a couple, they lose a couple. You just never got a feel for any kind of rhythm. But when they got into the Big Ten tournament, I think not just the fact that they beat Maryland and Wisconsin and also really pushed Purdue in the semifinal, but the way they went about those three games was encouraging. It was the first time really since the middle of January that I felt encouraged about the direction that this team was taking. I think that AJ Hogard played much, much better. He had been erratic during a lot of this season. He had high points, but he had some real lows. I thought Tyson Walker was playing much better. And let's not forget, he had a hell of a run against Purdue, even in that loss. And you had to feel good about where Michigan State was with its guard play. And you know, some other guys were starting to chip in. The defense was better. The defensive rebounding was better. And it felt like maybe they had a little something. Davidson, a first-round matchup, not an easy one because that's a veteran group, very, very skilled. If you remember that game, everybody in that lineup seemingly could shoot threes effectively, and we saw that in the game. Kind of a good comparison would have been standard-issue Wisconsin teams. That was sort of what Davidson was. You know, not particularly athletic, vulnerable in some ways defensively because of that, but really good shooting, don't turn the ball over, great defensive rebounding, and they play smart. They're not going to beat themselves, and they didn't. But Michigan State won the game, in part due to a great effort by Joey Hauser. And I think Joey was one of the few guys who, down the back half of Big Ten play, could really feel good about the way he had played. It wasn't that he was putting up spectacular games, but he was very steady in doing the things that he's capable of doing. His three-point shooting improved markedly. He was their one reliable defensive rebounder, in my opinion. And he just played within himself. And then that was kind of reached a peak in his game against Davidson, where he wasn't just playing well, he was dominating the game. He was the best player on the floor.
He's a wrecking crew in that first half.
They got a big win. And then you're in a second round matchup against Duke, who was a two seed, lots of talent, but a team that I honestly felt Michigan State had a real chance to hang in there with, and they did. Michigan State played a very good game against Duke and pushed them to the limit. You mentioned it. They were up five at just under 4 minutes left. Tyson Walker hit a big jumper to put the lead up to five. And it felt like, I'll tell you where I was. And I think we talked about this in our postgame that day. My thinking after he hit that shot was, Michigan State's going to beat them, because I expected Duke's young team, with all the pressure they were feeling with Krzyzewski's last season, all that pressure on the back of an extremely young group, I fully expected them to collapse at that moment. I thought that's what was going to happen. Instead, every one of those young guys made plays. I mean, Jeremy Roach, not a great shooter, hits a huge three. Banchero was, I mean, they just, everybody made plays. They had the big three from Roach, and then everything else was penetration, which Michigan State didn't do a good job at containing all day long, and Duke ends up winning the game. But I think you look back at it, and as a Michigan State fan, I still think you have to feel pretty good about that performance. You know, that was not a situation like much of the year where you looked at it and just said, boy, Michigan State just stunk the joint up. They were just really, really bad. They weren't bad at all. There were areas that were flawed. Their inability to contain dribble penetration was a big problem in that game. But there were far more strengths than weaknesses on evidence in that game. It was for a second round game, it was extremely well played. Michigan State looked much, much more like the team they were in November and December in that game. They just went and traded blow for blow against a really talented group. And in the end, they just didn't have the last punch. Duke did.
Yeah.
But you can't feel badly about that loss. So even in a loss, I think you had to feel like Michigan State's season ended on maybe a high note is a little stretch, but certainly on a note that left you feeling better about the way they played. They didn't go out, just get blown off the floor and just play really poorly and lose a game because of it. They lost a game because the other team made a couple fewer mistakes than they did, but by and large, they gave it everything they had and executed at a very high level.
Yeah, you didn't feel like you were, like there's a lot left in the tank that they had not performed adequately in that game, and that's really how you felt down the stretch. It's so funny, these seasons, they're kind of tricky because you watch the preseason non-conference, and you get an evaluation for the team. Then you watch the Big Ten, and then of course the tournament happens. And what is a successful season really changes? It vacillates, right? I think, you know, 2 years ago, you thought, oh, this team's gonna be okay, and then you think, wow, they're not even make the tournament. They're so bad, and they made the tournament sort of on a miracle. And then again, like you said, had some momentum, should have won that game against UCLA, right? Then they just didn't cut out the free throw line, which, again, this defensive rebounding is crazy, but you saw that a lot this season. That may be even more deflating than losing an offensive rebound is one off of a missed free throw.
No, that's the worst. Yes.
Yeah, that's probably the number one. Then maybe I'll give you up a 4-point play or something. But initially the season, I thought this is going to be a really good team. This is a Sweet 16 team, if not maybe a team that's going to contend for, you know, Sweet 16, maybe they get lucky and they get to a Final Four or something like that. And then you're at the point where you're kind of hoping that they keep enough of the wheels on so they can make it across the line and get into the tournament to keep the streak alive. And then hopeful, I think, a little bit that you maybe can squeeze into the Sweet 16 and beat, you know, a higher seed. So, you know, depending what you ask me, was it a successful season? It kind of depends when you're talking to me. Back in November, I would say a second round exit would have been kind of disappointing. But if you're talking to me in February or March, early March, I'd have been pretty excited with, playing Duke to the limit. So I don't know. I think it's a team that just never felt like you really knew who they were. You just obviously couldn't trust them. And I don't feel like they knew who they were offensively or defensively most of the time. And just, there was just not a, there were a lot of players who just, they kind of just would sometimes show up and sometimes not. And so I don't know. It was really hard to, know what a maximized Michigan State team was because they were just so different all the time. And so We saw, I think, what at the end, the last two games, I think we saw what Michigan State should have been most of the season, and they just weren't.
You hit on something though that people talked about a lot, which was the absence of that, you know, people call it alpha dog, you know, the linchpin, your leader, that they didn't have that. It was a question mark night to night as to who was going to show up. Now, there is a positive side to that, and the positive side to that is you are more difficult to scout in that respect, because opponents knew, well, it's likely somebody is going to have a very good game for them. We just don't know who. So, for example, it was hard for an opponent, I think, to come in with a plan of providing extra help or doubling somebody, because you never knew who was going to be the guy on a given night offensively for Michigan State. Whereas, you know, certain teams, if you're playing Wisconsin, well, you are going to have at least a man and some eyes on Johnny Davis at all times, right? Michigan State, it wasn't that simple. The downside to that, of course, is when you don't have any one guy you can count on, it becomes difficult, especially in close games, a lot of which happen in the Big Ten. It becomes difficult to know in a big moment, where am I going? You know, with the previous iteration of the team before the last couple of years, you know, you had Cassius Winston, you knew that, you know, Denzel Valentine, Draymond Green. I mean, we on and on and on. Michigan State's always had guys who, you know, Kalen Lucas. I mean, there was never a question on those teams in a tight moment, or just even not necessarily at the end of a game, but just in a big stretch, in like a leverage moment, maybe with 8 minutes left, and you need a basket to stem the tide, who are you going to? This year's team for Michigan State never really had an obvious answer for that. And that's just how it was. I would argue the one thing that last year's team had over this one is that last year's team, especially at the end of the year, did have that. Aaron Henry was that. This year's team didn't have anybody like Aaron who just kind of grabbed it and was the game in, game out, reliable presence to play through. They just never had that. In the end, I think that was a part of the problem, but I would argue that just as with the turnover discussion, it got overemphasized in discussions about this team, because truthfully, this team could have had all those same problems remain intact. But if they rebounded better on the defensive end, they win several more games. I guarantee it. If they were a typical Michigan State team on defense and as a defensive rebounding unit, what'd you say they were, 23-13?
Yeah.
They probably win 27, 28 games. Easy. Easy. If they were better at that end. Maybe more.
Only Michigan State would we be upset with a 23-win season. But
that too. And when we talk about expectations and evaluating a season, look, I don't expect the fan base is spoiled. I talk about this sometimes. Those of us who are old enough to remember before Tom Izzo, when Michigan State was, I would argue in the Judd Heathcote era, it was a solid, good program. Probably, certainly by the time he left, the last, say, five or six seasons he was here, Judd had gotten Michigan State into being a team that you thought of as a consistent top 25 team, but probably more often than not, the lower end of that.
Yeah, 25, yeah.
That, you know, in the entire decade of the 1980s, they made the NCAA tournament twice. That's two times in, eight times out, for those listening who don't remember it. So when I frame it in the totality of my perspective, I can't get that upset about a couple of seasons like we've had the last two, because I know how much worse it can be. Ask any other Big Ten. Ask an Indiana fan.
Sure, yeah. Or someone who's Minnesota, right? A team that had success for a while and then it just really has never been able to get over the hump again. Or Illinois fans. I mean, I guess they've had a couple good seasons recently. And I think, you know, when you look at Michigan State, it's easy. Recency bias is a real thing, especially in sports. And today now with social media, maybe it's just amped up. But I feel like it's really easy to forget that, you know, this team won the Big Ten, what, 2 years ago? Right. We won a couple years in a row. And last year was a stupid year, right, with the COVID. The year before that, I mean, that was a national championship team, caliber team, I think. A team that clearly had a chance with Cash Winston and Xavier Tillman. I don't think there's any question they would have competed. I mean, never know matchups and things can happen and stuff. But that was a team that had a real shot. And then last year with Aaron Henry, and I would say the one thing I noticed, and I don't know what you think about this, I feel like this team this year did not have a leader. And I don't think you necessarily have to have someone who's scoring 20 points a game or who is absolutely your go-to guy, but you got to have someone who commands the team and seems to be comfortable in their spot, you know, and I felt like this team didn't have that. Like the people who might you imagine might have been those players, like say Tyson Walker, he was a new guy on the team, and I don't think he felt comfortable in that role of being like his team. Likewise, I don't think Gabe and Marcus Bingham really are the kind of guys to be those that sort of vocal leaders. It never felt to me like those are the guys making people accountable and those the things you expect from a leader, either a quiet leader or you know a vocal leader. That sort of was part of the problem with their team, that they just never quite had that cohesion because of that.
It's a simplistic thing, but I think that there's some truth to it, that to say that Michigan State the last couple of years hasn't had dogs. They haven't had those guys who fill that kind of role that you're talking about. So a classic example of what you're talking about when you say it doesn't have to be a 20-point-a-night scorer. On the teams that he played on, Travis Walton was that player all 4 years.
Right.
From the moment he got to MSU, he was that kind of guy. Was never a great offensive player. Didn't matter. He was a leader. And I don't think it necessarily means you have to have that kind of personality either. The Winston teams did not have that. They didn't have, you know, Xavier Tillman is probably the closest thing they had to that. But he's not really that close. Xavier Tillman's a pretty nice guy. Not someone who I understand was any kind of locker room enforcer, you know. But what that team had was a maturity about it. You know, there are different ways of going about what you're talking about. And when you have a team headed by two guys who are as mature and as smart as Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman, that's going to create a level of expectation for teammates as well, and give you guys who are reliable when you need somebody to step forward, you know. So there are different ways to do it. The problem with this team is they didn't really have either of those things, you know. Now, do they have some guys that I think maybe could be that in the future? I hope, but we won't know until we get there. What we do know is that this year they didn't have anybody who was capable of filling that role. You know, Gabe and Marcus, look, I have, and we'll talk about it as we go through the individuals, but I am very pleased with what those guys did, both as basketball players and from what I understand, what they did as students. Neither guy came to Michigan State with what you would say were stellar academic backgrounds. You know, not that they were ineligible or anything, but they had some work to do, and by all accounts, both of them did it, particularly Marcus. I know that. He worked his tail off. And I think they did mature and grow as people, at least what we could see on the court. They became better basketball players, but neither of them was the kind of personality that you're talking about, and neither was consistently good enough to be the kind of player that a Winston or a Tillman is, where they'll still provide that leadership, even if they aren't taking guys' heads off, you know?
Yeah.
So I think when you're seniors, it's going to be tough.
It's tough. And I think that's the exhibit it more just someone who just has a calming presence. And I think they just didn't have that person on the team who could just settle people down and say, okay, we're okay. It's going to be all right.
100 degrees removed from that. I never, as a fan, as somebody watching it, I never felt calm with this team. Yeah. And that's, you're absolutely right. When Cassius Winston or Denzel Valentine or Draymond Green or Kalen Lucas or, you know, on and on and on and on, Mateen Cleaves, the Izzo era is littered with guys who, in a tough moment when the ball was in their hands, speaking for myself, I felt calm. I felt confident that the right play was going to get made. This team, never.
Yeah. You certainly never felt like... Yeah, you never felt like the situation was too big for players, most of those teams. And this season, right, the situation was often too big for the players. You just didn't know who was going to step up and do what needed to be done.
For reasons, too, which we'll talk about as we go through the individuals. I don't think it's the same issue with everybody.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, that'll probably do it for the season recap. We'll talk about player evaluations at the next show. So thanks so much for tuning into Final Four's On the Schedule. Be sure to subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And go green.
Thank you. At Grainger, we're for the ones who pay attention to every little detail. The ones who fuss, tinker, and sweat the small stuff. Because you know the tiniest thing can make the biggest difference when it comes to keeping business moving. We get it. We're the same way. Offering access to product experts to help you quickly and easily find what you need. So whatever your industry, you know you're always getting professional-grade products. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.